Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, a Radio Free Europe podcast on developments in Russia, its war against Ukraine, and its relations with the rest of the world. I'm Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL, and author of The Week in Russia newsletter. This week's podcast is about what's happening in Russia ahead of the campaign for the presidential election that's due to be held in March, and in which President Vladimir Putin, barring some very unexpected development, will be handed a new six-year term that would extend his rule until 2030. And my guest today on The Week Ahead in Russia is Andras Tsifra, a New York-based political analyst who's currently a fellow with the Eurasia Program, the Foreign Policy Research Institute, or FPRI, and a regular contributor to the Institute's Bear Market Brief. Thanks very much for joining me today, Andras.
Thank you for having me.
All right. It's great to have you on the show again. Now, in a way, I hate to focus on a Russian election because for decades now, the basic results of Russian elections have been a foregone conclusion. Putin has not yet announced plans to secure a new term in the vote due in March. He's expected to do that within about 2 weeks after the election date is officially announced and the campaign formally begins. But it seems certain that he will run, and given factors including extensive state control over the media, the systematic crushing of the opposition, and the scope for cheating, if he does run, he will win. But let me ask you, Andras, you're an expert who, maybe more than anyone I know, follows what, for lack of another word, I will call political developments in Russia, from the nationwide situation down to local elections, local issues, local protests, and sort of the mood across Russia. And you have a report coming out soon for FPRI that touches on some of the issues and conflicts that will affect the 2024 election. Now, one broad question and one that's more specific. The broad question is basically, how meaningful is this election? How meaningful will it be? And what will you be watching as the campaign plays out? And more specifically, does Putin have any cause for concern about the potential results?
Yeah, so good morning again, or good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are listening to this podcast. I don't think that Putin has any real concern about the results. However, we know that there is always a price to get a specific result. And, you know, let me unpack this a little bit. So we like to think of elections in autocracies as mere theaters, and to a large extent they are that. But within Russia, elections have always, even under Putin, played a role of legitimizing the ruling regime. And elections do this in various ways. They do this by showing how much support the system either has or can engineer for a certain result, and also by showcasing its sort of coercive capacity, because elections do not take place in a vacuum. Elections take place in real-life circumstances when people are facing specific issues that they are allocating either blame or praise for. They, even in Russia, use elections to sort of send signals to the regime on various levels, depending on the election that we're talking about. So while I wouldn't obviously advise anyone to analyze the electoral campaign before the 2024 presidential elections in Russia as you would an actual campaign before a presidential election in a democracy, it is still worth analyzing because there are issues and there are concerns in the Kremlin, as we can see from some of the policy actions that they have taken. And I'm going to talk about these in a minute. But if you just look at the bigger picture, then I'd say that for years now, we have been talking about the 2024 problem, which was that after the annulment of effective annulment of his presidential term count in the 2020 constitutional reform, Putin received an opportunity to run again twice for the presidency for 2 6-year terms, once in 2024 and once in 2030, if he so wishes, and of course, if the circumstances so wish. It would have appeared in 2022 that with the invasion of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the president, the regime, aimed to solve this the 2024 problem by sort of in engineering enough support with a successful war, with a successful invasion that would propel that would have left no questions about Putin's quote-unquote re-election in 2024. Now, we know that this has not exactly panned out the way the Kremlin probably wanted it, but it is but since then the Kremlin has adjusted in several ways. So first of all, there is a change that we have seen a changing narrative of the war. From the initial special military operation, which is of course as an expression still in use in the official rhetoric of the regime, but has also been increasingly supplanted by the framing of the war as a larger conflict between Russia and the West, which is about, which is mostly about values. We've seen this ultra-conservative turn in Russia. There is a quite fresh ban on the global LGBTQ movement. It's a rather difficult to grasp what the Kremlin means by it, but of course it's a signaling of the official regime ideology and the political orthodoxy defined by the regime moving in an ultra-conservative direction. We have now seen increasing talk about restrictive abortion legislation, for instance, and just in general, the diatribes against the decadent West, the position of Russia as a sort of a beacon against the global liberal forces has intensified. So the conflict itself, the war itself, Russia's war itself in Ukraine, has been increasingly depicted as a global conflict. At the same time, within Russia, and this was especially obvious and evident in the campaign of the 2023 regional and local elections, the war has been reduced to again the in the rhetoric of the regime to wars voters as something inevitable. Something that, but also something that happens in the background, that does not really affect the lives of ordinary Russians, at least directly. Now, I would like to emphasize directly because obviously, in many indirect ways, the war has been affecting ordinary Russians, and there is no evidence that I am aware of that would suggest that Russians are not responding to economic incentives or negative economic incentives. So, for instance, inflation, rising inflation, or falling living standards, or if you're talking about different incentives, not economic ones, but social incentives such as the effects of military mobilization, either the threat of a looming second military mobilization or the effects of the 2022 mobilization, Russians who were mobilized in September 2022 or after September 2022 and still haven't been rotated out of Ukraine, we see that these are creating dissatisfaction, and dissatisfaction that the Kremlin is acutely aware of and is concerned about. And so when we review some of the policy decisions over the past couple of months, we see that inflation is front and center, and there are various ad hoc decisions ranging from export bans to trying to sort of domestically control the prices of certain articles that the Kremlin has been taking or is asking regional leaders to take in order to dampen the effects of the social effects of these issues. Now, for instance, now of course, this does not mean by default that as long as these effects are there, people are going to blame Putin for it, or they are going to blame the war for it. I'm aware of research that it has tried to sort of ascertain to what extent people connect these issues. And just a couple of days ago, I have seen a fantastic presentation at the ACES conference by Henry Hale, Professor Henry Hale, from George Washington University, that suggested that there is a certain connection in the minds of voters, but that doesn't say anything about blame allocation. So, whom do people think is responsible for these conditions, and what is the way out that they see? What would they want to change? So this leads back to the, I think, what is the core question of these elections. We from here, where we are, you and I, from the West, so for us, it very often might seem obvious that Putin represents the war. But as far as I can tell from, again, survey results and just the critique of the war that we have, but the types of critique of the war that we have seen in Russia over the past year, in Russia, this is not obvious. There are many people in Putin's coalition who are not enthusiastic supporters of the war, and also there are many war supporters who are not enthusiastic supporters of Putin, or even would rather see someone else, or would rather see the war conducted in a different way, or are blaming Putin personally for the lack of success in the war. So this is, I think, for the regime, this is both an opportunity and a risk. An opportunity in the sense that it opens up a what we know from reporting on how the Kremlin is preparing for the war, a sort of neutralized campaign, which focuses, as did the 2023 local and regional elections campaigns, on domestic issues and social aid, on opportunities that arose ostensibly from the war in terms of for instance, a very low unemployment, which again is a buzzword that the Russian authorities have been using. It's not necessarily a good thing economically, but it's certainly, it's something that rhymes with that resonates with voters. And at the same time, it opens up the opportunity for critics of the war who are pro-war or who do not question the war effort. So we have seen, for instance, several sorts of these protests. So one obvious critique is the nationalist critique, the sort of the extremist critique, which We have seen the in the mutiny of Prigozhin, for instance, but even afterwards, even after his death, we now see Igor Girkin, one of the most one of the most popular sort of Z influencers, war bloggers, who himself, of course, was a war participant, saying that he will run for president and he will do so on a sort of an extremist nationalist ticket. And on the other hand, we see protests of protests by the relatives, the loved ones of mobilized soldiers who criticize the war effort because it means that their loved ones are not related out of the war zone. And for the Kremlin, this is an awkward, this like both of these are awkward critiques, because they do not question the war itself, but they do tap into into dissatisfaction with how the war is prosecuted, how the war is going. So this is the dilemma. This is the dilemma that the Kremlin is facing. And we can, you know, if we can, we can also obviously talk about the structural elements of politics, which I think are significantly more in place. These are the When we talk about the structural elements, we talk about the Kremlin's control over institutions that they can use to engineer results that they want. To me, the 2023 regional and municipal elections show that, by and large, the Kremlin is in control of these institutions and is actively trying, of course, to reduce the costs by introducing elements such as, or rather, expanding elements such as online voting, which is an easier way potentially to engineer results, because it does not always it requires the active cooperation of significantly fewer people. It's more centrally administered, and of course, these attempts to sort of bypass local power brokers and officials that the Kremlin had traditionally used to rely on to engineer the results. This might create tensions, and maybe it is already creating tensions, but I don't see this panning out in the context of the presidential elections. So, in a nutshell, or in a rather big nutshell, so to say, this is the lay of the land as I see it, 5 months before the vote.
All right, thanks very much, Andras. Great the way you, I think, gave a really good kind of summary of the situation, but also the background going back to, when I remember writing stories about, Putin's 2024 problem, how is he going to deal with that? And this was probably even before 2020, when as you said, he pushed through these constitutional amendments that. There were, I think, hundreds of them, but essentially the main one was the amendment that erased term or erased his previous terms in terms of term limits. Sorry, that's a lot of use of the word term, but allowing him, as you mentioned, to run, next year and then again in 2030. So, but also, your mention of the war as the initial, I guess the initial goal, or at least one of the initial goals, was to set it up so that he would just be essentially wildly popular ahead of the election by subjugating Ukraine. I mean, so and that did not happen, and so now he's in a way faced with the 2024 problem again, as you say. Again, the results are to some degree a foregone conclusion. I just one thing I wanted to ask you about is you mentioned quite a bit about how the war is playing into this ahead of the election and ahead of the formal campaign, and there's some of the challenges, I guess, that the Kremlin faces, from both sides. You mentioned the nationalists, extremists, who don't like the way the war is going, and the people, mostly relatives of soldiers, who don't like it either because their family members are being sent to war and not coming back, or not being rotated out if they do survive. But I guess the question would be, how will the, and obviously the Kremlin is trying to suppress protests. But my question, I guess, is how do you think the war will be treated in the campaign? I mean, would it be, you said, I think, that not everyone associates Putin with the war. Do you think the Kremlin will try to have him kind of be the face, as he has been, of, be talking about what he's portraying as a kind of a civilizational conflict with the West and a fight for Russia's survival against what he claims, but in fact is a non-existent Western effort to destroy Russia essentially and to cancel its culture. So do you think the Kremlin will have Putin focus on that while trying to kind of I don't know, blame others for the small things, or not small, but the things that are going wrong with the war for Russia, and in fact just the relations with Ukraine, while leaving, I guess, Putin to talk about global things. Last week, I believe he had a speech in which he said that Russia's saving the world, things like that. So that's just a conjecture, but just wondering how you think the war will be portrayed in this campaign.
So I believe that there is a bit of a the Kremlin is in a bit of a bind here because again, engineering the results is probably not going to be too hard with all the administrative control that the authorities currently have. But as we both mentioned, the election is meant to be both a grand declaration of support for both Putin and the war. And I think the second one is also important for the authorities, given that there is currently no other domestic political vision available in Putin's toolbox, that is, for the to offer to or to offer to Russian voters. So the election sort of has to be a confirmation, a very strong confirmation that not only that Putin still enjoys the support of a large majority of Russians, but also that his politics enjoys the support of a large majority of Russians, and those politics is like however you want to paint it. Again, the Kremlin will not probably not put the war front and center in the campaign, but the current status quo, whereby the war as a conflict between Russia and the West will certainly be there in the background. The fact that because of this conflict, Russians have to sort of endure certain kinds of hardship, but at the same time they have the sort of the material wealth to rely on. To sort of make their lives seem normal while the war lasts. So this is I think this is a difficult question, a difficult riddle to solve, and I'm not saying that it's impossible to solve, especially with the administrative and media control that the Kremlin has. I'm just saying that you have to deal with a lot of contradicting narratives because. Showing this support, showing this popular support for the war, is key not only for the domestic elites, or for or, and probably not even for voters. But it also is a way of Putin to argue that Russia is ready to fight a long war. So when we look at 2024, we are obviously now focusing on the March 2024 presidential election in Russia, but we also need to focus on the other elections that will take place in 2024. And currently, as long as the Kremlin's narrative is that the only thing standing between Russia and victory in Ukraine is basically Western support to the Ukrainian side, then these elections are linked. It will not be over in March 2024 for Putin. The election is to carry, from his perspective, the message that the war is if not what Russians want, but it is something that they can live with for a fairly long time. So domestically, in order to maintain this support, Putin needs to maintain belief that meeting the belief that victory is just around the corner. And internationally, he needs to maintain the belief that Russia is determined to wage a long war. These are not necessarily, again, these are not necessarily contradicting narratives, but they are difficult to square with each other. So, I think the war cannot be entirely avoided. At least the secondary effects of it have to be talked about, have to be explained to. The war itself, the narrative has to be explained to the Russian population, because the support that the Kremlin engineers in these elections has to be large enough so that it leaves no doubt that there is currently no domestic political alternative for Putin. And this does not mean that the Kremlin is going to try to fight this campaign, like we're going to engineer this campaign or stage this campaign on an enthusiastically pro-war agenda. I don't think that, based on what we know about the attitudes, the changing attitudes of the Russian population, would work. But it does mean that the war cannot be completely exempt. So, what will be exempt from the campaign, or what the Kremlin is going to try to keep exempt from the campaign, is our mobilization and the potential second round of mobilization that might still come after the 2024 election. Any kind of battlefield failures and Ukrainian victories that happen between now and March 2024. Those are, as far as I can see, the two things that can really change the conversation and could force the Kremlin to sort of react to events that it did not plan to react to, or it does not want to react to. As regards the domestic secondary effects of the war, be they economic or social, I think they have a script for that, and they are going to play by that script.
All right, thanks very much. And yeah, that certainly makes sense. That, I guess from the Kremlin's point of view, obviously they would want to take more territory, but maybe in terms of the election, all they need is to not suffer some really noticeable defeat or loss or major setback in the war. They did suffer. They have suffered several of those since the full-scale invasion. But lately there's been talk of a stalemate. And there haven't been huge Ukrainian gains. So it seems like the way it stands now is, would be fine for the Kremlin. I wanted to ask, just sort of go back to one thing you mentioned, and just ask a question about how it's gonna, or what the role in the election is. You mentioned the ruling, I guess it was on Friday, in which the Moscow court went with prosecutors as they almost always do, and declared the what they called the LGBT movement, an extremist group. Now, of course, this it would be one thing if they said, the LGBT rights, activism or something like that. But of course, the LGBT movement does not exist, as an entity. And I guess many observers have pointed out that this, leaves room for a lot of persecution and prosecution, just for, and of course, and we have seen that there were raids on clubs over the weekend. So, but my question is, obviously that fits into this kind of campaign to show that Russia is fighting against the West in kind of an cultural and moral battle. And there's also a lot of talk about, moves against abortion. So my question is, to what degree do you think that these moves against the LGBT community and against abortion, I guess, are really sort of part of the presidential campaign, or is it something that's just, happens to be happening at the same time that Russia's gearing up for this campaign?
And I think they are absolutely part of this campaign. So it's I'm not saying that Putin is offering a political vision or an ideology. I don't think that's what we're seeing. I think what we're seeing is an attempt to influence what is inside people's heads. The things that you have mentioned, I can again. If you separate for a moment the anti-LGBTQ wave and the pro-abortion sorry the anti-abortion wave of public discourse, I think one of these issues is of course more has more practical implications for Russia than the other, but given Russia's demographics,
Yeah, absolutely.
but I think in both cases, what we're seeing is that neither of these are particularly important issues in Russia for Russian voters. It's not this is not the LGBTQ issues may be things that people in cities think about every once in a while, but it's not something that keeps them awake at night, and neither is abortion. However, by intentionally talking about it and ramping up the rhetoric, they can distract attention away from more sort of bread and butter problems. I'm not saying that this is going to be 100% effective, but we see, and this is, and neither and neither are they, sorry, nor are they completely characteristic of Russia only. We see such tactics in other countries. It's just, the question is how far a political establishment is going to go or can afford to go before, finding itself. Sort of with either a popular backlash or an international backlash, and I don't think that currently the Russian government is afraid of either. So they can go pretty far, and So these are attempts to shape the conversation, to shape what people are thinking about, at least some of them. Not everyone is, of course, going to be furiously thinking about either abortion or LGBTQ rights in Russia, but it will impact the conversation, just like the whole framing of the war as a grand conflict between Russia and the West also impacts the conversation of how people think about their current situation and whom they allocate blames to, and in general what they get outraged by. So I believe that's what we're seeing. I don't think that this is, in any sense a genuine sort of ideological offer to the Russian voters, which, by the way, also underlines one important thing about the election itself and and how the results will have to be interpreted, is that I have mentioned both in the case of the war and in the case of Putin, that the support that we see is not necessarily overlapping, but in both cases, I think what they share is that there's a lot of shallow support. People who say, for instance, that they support Putin, not because they enthusiastically support Putin, but because he's the incumbent, or because there is no alternative, no visible alternative to Putin. And the same thing is true for the war. As long as there is no visible alternative to the war, because the because either because the Kremlin has succeeded in framing it as such, or because people simply see no future in which all the sacrifices that they were forced to make for Putin's military campaign will pay some dividends, because after the war they're going to lose the territories, they're going to remain economically isolated, and so on. So that can easily produce a way of thinking in which people are not enthusiastic supporters, but they also don't think any better alternative. So the support is relatively shallow. And I think probably the core question of the election for Putin and for anyone involved in Russian domestic politics is whether, either before the election or after the election, something will come to some external stimulus will come to effectively challenge this sort of shallow support. So we talked about Ukrainian military successes, we talked about the mobilization. So as long as support is this shallow, and as long as it is obvious that the election engineered from this shallow support some kind of grand but obviously, or to most people obviously, phony acclamation of support, then the results are going to the threshold of challenging these results or disputing these results post-election also drops. So it is going to be easier to say, well, that in case of another in case of one in case of a an external shock to the system post-election, that look, yes, Putin got 70-80%, but we all know that most of that was fake, that most of that was not genuine. So I think this is probably what concerns, to bring it back to your initial question, when it comes to the results, I think this is the part that may concern the Kremlin. Because if you remember, in 2018, Putin was reelected with more than 70% of support, and then just a couple of months later, his government's decision to enact a very unpopular pension reform caused protests and caused his and his government's popularity to drop. So from this perspective, the election is a point in time, but the shallowness of the support and the potential challenges to it remain.
That's fascinating. I mean, I think so. It's kind of like it's a foregone conclusion, but it will be fragile in almost any circumstances in terms of, if something happens, let's say. Good to mention the protests that are probably still on Russia's mind or on the Kremlin's mind against the after the or amid and after the pension reform, in which retirement age was increased. All right. On that note, Andasha, I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Once again, I've been speaking to Andras Tsifra, a New York-based political analyst who is a fellow with the Eurasia Program of the Foreign Policy Research Institute, or FPRI, where he has a report coming out soon on some of the issues that we have discussed. Andras is also a regular contributor to FPRI's Bear Market Brief. And my name is Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL. This has been The Week Ahead in Russia. Our theme music is Не стреляй, or Don't Shoot, a song from the early 1980s by Yuri Shevchuk and DDT. Please be sure to check out my newsletter, The Week in Russia, which covers the latest developments in Russian politics and society, as well as Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Subscribe by visiting www.referl.org.